And joining us right now on PMP Network is the fabulous June Lockhart. You know her, you love her as a two-time Emmy Award nominee and a Tony Award winner. She is, of course, a legend as the mom in two TV series, Lassie and Lost in Space. And we welcome her to the program now.
Oh, it's so lovely to talk to you, Mark. Of course, and you and I have been pals. We've known each other for many, many years.
Yes, we have. And time has not changed. You still sound exactly, and you look great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing to me.
Well, that's the matter of good genes, and I'm very careful about what I eat, and I work out, and I walk, and I'm very involved with all kinds of things, particularly right now with the Los Angeles Lawyers Philharmonic, and also they have a big band, and we're working up to a big concert, which is going to be done to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the city of Beverly Hills.
Wow.
And I'm going to be introducing The World is Waiting for the Sunrise, which my father wrote years ago. It was a very famous song. I don't know if you remember it. And there was a Les Paul Mary Ford version of it. It was the first song that John Lennon ever learned to play on the guitar.
Wow.
Thomas Edison even recorded it.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And Willie Nelson recorded it most recently. And, it's really, I'm going to get to do that. But it seems that there must have been about 60 composers living in Beverly Hills all through, of all those wonderful years of the golden age of music, movie musicals.
Wow.
And, as a matter of fact, if you're interested, you can go online, and it's losangeleslawyers.phil. And read about the orchestra, which has judges and lawyers, and these, a lot of them all wanted to be musicians before they took up law, and they're graduates of Juilliard and Berkeley and Cleveland and the big band. A lot of them toured with big bands like Dorsey and others like that. So anyway,
yeah.
I didn't mean to digress. But
that's
anyway,
okay.
That's what my big interest is at the moment. We're having great fun with that.
I thought it was really cool. I read that you got an award from the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, a medal for inspiring the public about space exploration. Is that from Lost in Space?
It's interesting because I was calling the Rose Parade in... it was January 1st, 1970, and I was able to interview, I was doing it for CBS, you know, with Bob Barker,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to interview Charles Conrad and Dick Gordon and Alan Bean after it was the second moon landing, and they had had two moonwalks lasting about 7.5 hours, and so from that time on, I had been doing things for NASA, sort of assignments. They'll call up and say, would you go up to Vandenberg, up to Edwards Air Force Base and talk to our employees? And I would do that. And then they'd say, well, we've got a launch at Vandenberg. Will you go to that? Yes, I would. And I've been to all kinds of wonderful experiences at JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory,
mm-hmm.
which is NASA out here, too.
Right.
When they've had, landing on Mars with the rover and or flybys of the Cassini incursion. And for years and years I've been doing it. Whenever they call and ask me, also a couple of concerts at the Kennedy Center to celebrate various NASA events. So when we've had those, they just call and say, can I be there or help MC these events? I say absolutely. So that's what I do. And so this was a lovely, completely, completely unexpected and a great surprise. And I love the medal. It's beautiful.
It sounds cool. It's a nice thing. Where do you have it displayed in your home?
Well, I carry it with me for anybody who wants to look at it. Honey, I'm showing it to strangers in elevators if they want to see it.
Now, you don't carry your Tony Award with you, do you?
No, I don't. I don't do that. The Tony, in the days that I received it, was a beautiful medal, and it on a gold bracelet. The men were given wallets, I think, or something, or cigarette lighters, and those were the days. and I was or a cigarette case, something like that. And I was given a medal, which is a gold medal, and it says Antoinette Perry Award Best Debut, and that was for the 47-48 season.
You know, it's interesting.
And that's at the Smithsonian, the original. Yeah. I had an exact copy made of it, but the Smithsonian asked if I would give that to them.
Oh, that's kind of cool, too. So you're in the Smithsonian.
I like that. Yes.
Do they have some of the stuff from Lost in Space and Lassie there, too?
I think John Provost's mother, he was Timmy, sent the checkered shirt and the blue jeans from the wardrobe. I don't know if there's anything there from Lost in Space. Oh yes, there's what are they called? You know, you put your a lunch pail.
Oh, real lunch pail.
Yeah, I think there's a lunch pail there from Lost in Space. For that sort of induction of the lunch pail.
We have a ton of emailers that have sent emails because I mentioned on Twitter and.
Oh, good. Well, let's answer
them. So, here's one that wants to know. Was Dr. Jonathan?
You mean Jonathan Harris?
Yeah, they said was he as scary in person as he was on TV?
He was exactly the same on as off. He had a wicked sense of humor. He was kind of greedy and manipulative. And we loved him anyway, you know. Mm. But he was pretty much the same on as off.
Got one here from Tennessee, and she said, "Mark, I know you know trivia. Do you know the other series that June Lockhart starred in the 60s that you didn't mention in your promos?"
Maybe Petticoat Junction.
Yes, you played Dr. Janet Craig on that show, right?
Yeah, Lady Doctor. I loved that part. And, of course, you know, it was interesting because those three series were all so rather different. Lassie was, you know, what it was. And then Lost in Space was sort of more adventure. But Petticoat Junction was a lovely comedy. And, of course, I had gotten my award on Broadway for comedy. Mm-hmm. So I knew about it and how to play it and loved it. And to join that cast when the show had been on for such a long time, and the way that came about was I had known the producer for quite a while, and I dropped him a note and said, well, I was finally, because Lost in Space was no longer on, mm-hmm. So I said, I'm out of the Silver Lame, and if you're doing a new series, I'd love to work with you. And he called and said, can you come by today? I need to talk to you about something. And B. Benaderet was very, very ill at the time, mm-hmm. and I didn't know that, of course, but I thought that he might be doing a new series, not that he was replacing anybody. So, but I loved that. We did that. I did that all the last few years that it was on.
It's amazing that, you know, that I didn't know all the details, but here's another one. Someone else wrote, this one's from Vegas, actually. And I don't think it's Carol Nash, our friend.
Oh, but, she'd have identified herself.
But she, whoever wrote this, wrote and said, Mark, again, you know your trivia. Do you know that June was not the first to play Lassie's mom?
And that's right.
You replaced, actually, Cloris Leachman, right?
Yes. Well, Jan Clayton, a friend of mine, had, you know, created the role. Right. I was living in New York at the time. And then when she wanted to leave, they offered it to me, but I was still living in New York, so I turned it down. And then Cloris played it for a year and didn't care for the part, and they weren't very happy with her. And in the meantime, my domestic situation had changed, shall we say. Mm-hmm. I was in the middle of a divorce. I had two children to support, and I'd moved back home. And I ran into the producer, Benita Granville, and Bob Golden, and I ran into them on the street in Beverly Hills, and they offered it to me again. And I said, he said, yeah, we should do the Mother in the Lassie series for us. And I said, well, I'll do it for a year. And he said, that's not long enough. On my way home, I thought, this would be really fun to do, and I've got the children to support, and So I had my agent investigated. I tested for it. I was cleared by the Campbell Soup Company, because in those days, of course, it was the 50s.
Right.
And everybody was, you know, they were making sure that nobody was a communist sympathizer.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I got the part, and I started it and did it for 6 years.
Wow.
And I loved it. It just suited me at the time. It was perfect. And at the same time, of course, I did all those game shows, and I did the Rose Parade and the Thanksgiving Day Parade and all kinds of, and Miss Universe and Miss USA, and I did all the spectrum of everything, which was really, really grand.
Now, we had another person who wanted to know if you see any of your old castmates from any of these shows.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, you know, they have these wonderful autograph conventions. So John Provost from Lassie and I, we will do them with the cast of Lost in Space. And also one of the fun things of these events is that shows, there are actors there from other shows that I've done in which I've starred on. And so it's like old home week, and these actors will come up. Well, Lonnie Anderson.
Sure.
I played her mother in a marvelous show, and she and I are good pals. But and for Lost in Space, we see Billy Mumy, Angela Cartwright, who's now a grandmother.
Wow.
As of last week, and let's see, Marta Kristen, and I said Billy, Mark Goddard.
Yeah.
And John Provost. So it's really sweet for us to be able to all get together, and we do enjoy it.
It's a wonderful thing. And, you know, you mentioned the two children, and I know you have two daughters. One of them I actually had on this show a while ago. Her name's Anne, and she's an actress as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I had her on the show, years ago, and I said to her, you know, I know your mother. And she's like, oh, okay. But, I mean, she's a very talented actress in her own right.
Yes. Yes, she is.
And you have a daughter who's also a marketing manager and art director, right?
That's right, for the J. Robert Scott Furniture Company. And this is the most beautiful furniture. And it's all handmade, absolutely. It's a needle and thread operation in a big factory. And there aren't many like that these days. And the designer, Sally Serkin Lewis, is a marvelous artist.
Big Joe asks if you remember fondly your days playing James Caan's mother.
Yes. Oh, that was fun. That was a good series.
Yeah, that was in Las Vegas, the series, right?
Vegas. Las Vegas it was. And, I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
She was a tough broad, that mother. I love playing tough. That's great fun.
Now, you know, someone wrote to me and said, well, what is June doing now? And they're like, you know, is she retired? No.
No, not at all.
You just started filming not that recently, the Tesla Effect, the a video game, right?
Yes, and that was an interesting experience. We did that in Salt Lake City, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. And it's a green screen, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very interesting script. And I played a scientist in it, which appealed to me. And, we had a very good shoot on it.
I understand, though, that you actually agreed to play the mother of the main character in that, like 12 years ago or something like that.
Didn't know that. No, I think
that might be incorrect.
That might be apocryphal.
It said that you had a verbal agreement to play the role in the early 2000s. That's not correct.
Well,
huh?
They weren't doing those things in the year 2000.
Mm. Well,
video games like that.
I guess you're right. That's true.
So I think we can cross that off.
Let's cross that.
I don't know who makes this stuff up.
I don't know, but there is stuff that's made up all the time. It's unbelievable.
Well, anyway, we can be in charge of clearing it up.
What's the worst thing, talking about things like that, what is the worst thing you've seen in the tabloids about you or someone you love?
You know that I've never had any inaccurate or nasty stuff in the tabloids.
Really?
And with the Inquirer or the Globe, they run beautiful pictures of me, and I always call them and thank them for the stories. And funny, they did a lovely story about me and NASA, And I called, and I got the editor, and I said, "Hi, it's June Lockhart." And she said, "Oh." And I said, no, I'm calling to say thank you. It was a lovely story and completely accurate. And what had happened was there was a wonderful show on called, it was a daytime interview show out of Washington, D.C. And I've forgotten the name of it now. Anyway, and she had heard it while driving to work in the morning and had gotten a copy of it and had printed it pretty much word for word. And I was so delighted with it. It was just wonderful and a lovely picture. So, no, I have absolutely no quarrel with the Globe and the Enquirer. They have always been wonderful to me and lovely stories.
That's great. We had Michael Walker on a little while ago, and we were talking about him about some of the things that have been written. He tries his hardest to make sure everything's true before he prints it. But
yes.
there are some who don't care, I guess, you know, in that
business.
Well,
I don't know. I must say my experience has been nothing but they've been very kindly and enthusiastic, so that's good.
You mentioned your father, Gene, who
yes.
He came into prominence in Broadway in 1933 with Our Wilderness, and of course your mom was an actress, Kathleen.
That's right.
And I guess I'm thinking about this. This must have been really fun. In 1938, you were 13 years old. You actually appeared in A Christmas Carol opposite your parents.
Yes, that was my first film. And, of course, that is such a delight to see every year on Turner Classic Movies. Oh, and speaking of Turner Classic Movies, can you imagine how neat it is to wake up in the middle of the night and turn on the TV, and then I see my father's face in full close-up there doing some scene from some movie that he made. And it's just delicious. It's like some sort of a, hi, I'm here, you know.
Yeah, I never left you. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And, yes, Christmas Carol was a lovely experience. And I had made my debut at the Metropolitan Opera House when I was 8. We opened the season that year in the first English-sung opera called Peter Ibbetson by Deems Taylor. And I was in a pantomime scene. And so that was, and I was paid for it. So that was my first professional appearance in 1933. So I guess you might say that I've been doing it the most for the longest.
If you think about it, that's
it's 80 years.
80 years.
As a paid performer in
wow.
this business.
That's unbelievable.
It really is.
And you're 89 now?
I'm 88.
88. You look fantastic.
Thank you very much.
What is it that keeps you so young?
Well, it's the genes, I think. And I told you, I eat well and I'm very careful.
Mm.
And I work out and I'm just curious and I have I love to read. I still have this great thrust for information about a desire for information. I follow the news. I've got to have my New York Times every day, and I have great curiosity and a sense of wonderment about things.
Hmm.
And, of course, being involved with NASA, you just have to be excited about all the work that they're doing.
No question about that.
So there's no reason at all to slow down if you're healthy and have intellectual curiosity and excitement about it.
What do you think about the whole computer age and the cell phones and the internet and all the things that have opened up from that?
Well, let me tell you about that. I have a cell phone. Nobody has the number of it, and I use it only if I have to call 911 because I've got a flat tire or I'm need the auto club to come and bail me out of somewhere. Nobody has the number. I am not online. I have a fax machine, and I have a copy machine, and a couple of telephones, and that's it. And you know, my life works wonderfully.
So, do you have any grandchildren?
Oh, yes, I do, but they're in Texas.
Okay. No, I was going to say they don't text you. See,
no.
The kids all text. That's what they do.
Yes, and they sit at everybody, the family, you go out for a family dinner, and mm-hmm. I see them at tables, and they're all texting.
They're all texting. My kids do
that
here.
Sometimes they're texting each other at the table while they sit there. Yeah. And the art of conversation and good language is lost. Everything is abbreviated. And this is no criticism. I admire them for what they want to do, but I'm not interested.
Yeah, I think. Well, you know, something. I don't know if it's an age thing or not, but here I am. I'm trying to engineer this interview we're doing. It's
well. I hope you're doing well. When we're finished, you can check it and make sure that you've got it all. And if not, we'll do it again.
I'll find out. But the whole point of the matter is it's in a computer. I used to record it on a cassette deck, and it was real easy. I'd take the cassette, bring it to the web's guy, and he'd put it on.
That's right.
Now it's all done by emails and all this. It's just unbelievable.
And before the cassette, what was it called? It was
a cartridge, the 8-track cartridge. We had the cart.
The cartridge,
yeah. We had the cart machine.
And then there was reel-to-reel.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that tells you real age, because when I was first in radio, we were taught to do editing with a razor blade.
On the
reel to reels.
Yeah,
on the reel to reels. And I tell that to the kids, and they're like, yeah, right. Why would you use a razor blade? You had to slit your wrist because it was frustrating? I was like, no. We
Not
use
at all.
Tape.
No,
we use
easy,
tape.
Yeah.
You know, they can't believe this stuff because it is the technology is just amazing.
Yes, it's quite marvelous. And a great deal of it has come from NASA, oddly enough. And, of course, the advances, if I may digress for a minute, that we enjoy from, speaking of NASA, of the extraordinary things that have been accomplished in medicine with NASA are just remarkable. And things with firemen, their uniforms are lighter, the face screens that they can see through smoke. Things that they take your temperature now by just waving the thermometer over your forehead instead of shoving it in your mouth.
Right.
And all things that in weather forecasting that comes from the satellites that are. Do you know that our first weather satellites were put up by during the Eisenhower administration?
No, I didn't.
So, you know that our highway system was put down from north to south and east to west during the Eisenhower administration, because he wanted a way to move his troops quickly, mm-hmm. without interruption, if he needed to do it after
right.
World War II, if
right.
he needed to do it again. And then he also wanted to know what the weather was going to be if he sent out a whole armored division to cover, to cross Route 66 or something, it was not Route, it was 10,
mm-hmm.
Highway 10. And so it was during the Eisenhower administration that the first weather satellites were set up. And at present, we have two of them up there in standard position, way, 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 way high, photographing the weather on the U.S. Constantly and beaming it down. And then there are lower ones in polar orbit that go north to south, and they last about 5 years or so, and then they're replaced. But they are constantly monitoring the weather, and it's all free. Anybody can sign on and get their weather and then adapt it to their own television shows or whatever the weather department is, the newspapers or whoever needs to know about weather. It's just, you just plug into NASA satellite weather, and you've got it.
Mm.
And it's from the government. And the reason NASA's great accomplishments haven't been publicized more is that, of course, it's the government, and they, can't hire a PR person to go out there and do it for them. So that would be inappropriate.
Mm.
So unless you have a volunteer such as I am, then you wouldn't know about as many of these things.
Well, we appreciate June Lockhart telling us that today about NASA. You know,
anyway,
we
have got some more trivia questions from your
actually,
viewers.
Actually, yes, I was going to say that Teresa wrote in and said, "Mark, do you know the two items, a film and the two films that June and Anne appeared in together. And I know that you did a fantasy film Troll with your daughter.
Yes.
And she played you in a younger version of you in that film,
right?
That's right. And also the other one was, I must say I cheated on this one, but I did find out it was Magnum P.I.
Oh, yes.
The TV show.
Yes, and there again she played me, a younger version of me.
What was that like working with your daughter?
Well, we had no scenes together.
Oh, so it was just
well, you know, we were playing the same part, so we wouldn't have scenes together. However, working with Tom Selleck, of course, was delicious. And I enjoyed that very much. And we shot it in Hawaii, of course.
Yeah.
And it was what a good series that was. Just excellent, and he was splendid in it.
And someone else said to me, and I did not know this, someone else wrote and said, Mark, do you know that June was in Full House? And I said, no. But I actually looked it up, and you did. You played Miss Wiltrout, Michelle Tanner's kindergarten teacher on Full House.
That's right. Yes, that was a charming show. I did two episodes of that. And I think the episode was that Michelle wanted to sort of arrange a hookup between me and her father in the show.
Mm.
And we had to let her down gently that, no, we were really not interested in each other that way.
And the other thing that someone just pointed out to me, too, in an email that just came, actually, which is something I didn't even think about to ask you, but there was a film in 1998 of Lost in Space, and you had a cameo in that.
Yes, I did. I played the principal of the school that the young boy was going to before their space launch, and had a very important scene with the mother about whether the child should go to space or whether he should stay here and continue his education, stay on Earth.
Yeah.
And that was, and we shot that in England, but the movie somehow didn't quite capture what the story had been in the series. It had more special effects and things like that.
Yeah.
But a lot of the diehard fans didn't support it.
Yeah, I never went and saw it, and I loved Lost in Space. And
I must say it was the loudest movie I'd ever been to. Good Lord, the sound was so loud. Everybody commented on that. It was all... Anyway, so that was that story.
Yeah, Lost in Space, though, I look back at it now, and I loved the show. And part of it was the bad guy, the bad doctor, and part of it was you and Bill, who I had on the show a couple times as well, who did a great job playing young Will Robinson. And the robots, I love the robot.
Yes, that was, and of course, Bobby May was the man in the robot.
Mm.
And he got the job because he fit the suit. It really was one of those. And he was a very nice man. He died recently. But, he was fun.
Warning.
That's right.
Someone just sent me a challenge, and it's the first time anybody's ever challenged me by email. They said, Mark, can you remember the Lassie theme song? And I believe it went like this.
That's right. And do you know what that music is?
I don't.
It's Greensleeves.
You're
kidding.
It's
an old...
I know that song.
It's one of those written by that famous writer, Anonymous.
No, I know. Greensleeves?
No, not that one?
Well,
it later had some lyrics.
Oh, okay.
But it's an old traditional English melody.
Because Greensleeves was done by the Four Lads as a song in the 50s.
Well, that may be. But the Greensleeves that was used, first of all, in the film in, I think, 1942, the first movie of Lassie. And it was used in that, and so it stayed. It was used all the way through all the series.
Who did the whistling in that? Do you know?
No.
Yeah, I wonder if one of the creators did the whistling. It's an interesting.
I think
to know.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting to know that. That's a piece of trivia that I'm sure someone out there probably knows. If you know the answer, just email it to pmpco@aol.com.
And then all the additional music for the show that when I was in was done by Les Baxter, a composer arranger.
Ah.
And he went to Canada and laid down a lot of different tracks. Not Canada. He went to Germany and did it because it was non-union.
Now, you mentioned that you're not online. So is there a junelockhart.com website?
Well, apparently there is. But you can find me in a lot of places. Of course, you can find me with the Los Angeles Lawyers Philharmonic. You can find June Lockhart. I think there's a Facebook up on me. And, it's out there.
But
I have nothing to do with it.
So you have nothing to do with either the Facebook account either?
No. Oh. I think my granddaughter put it up on her Facebook about the fact that I've been, that I was